Welcome to Generative Age, a podcast that explores the rapidly evolving world of generative AI and its impact on education.
Guided by our expert facilitators, Alana Winnick and Dr. Cameron Faggio,
we speak with practitioners and thought leaders in education who are shaping the course of generative AI in the classroom.
Whether you're an educator, administrator, technology leader, or simply interested in the future of education, join us on this journey through the Generative Age, powered by NYSTE,
the New York State Association for Computers and Technologies in Education. Join us as we explore the cutting edge of creativity and all the ways in which generative AI is changing the face of education.
Please excuse the poor audio quality in our earlier episodes. We never anticipated that this would grow into what it has become, and we have since made significant improvements to our audio setup to provide you with a better listening experience.
Joining us, my name is Amy DelCorvo. I'm the CEO Executive Director for NYSTE, and we have our presenter. We have Alana Winnick and Dr. Cameron Faggio, who started this discussion with us on the first installment. And then today, presenting for us, we have Tim Needles. And Tim, in addition to being Tim Adobe Ambassador, correct?
Yeah.
And again, has been speaking all over on a national circuit recently. He's also a technology integration specialist and art teacher at Smithtown Central School District, as well as Five Towns College. And he's also a NYSTE board member, so we are very, very lucky to have him as well. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Alana and Cameron, and thank you so much for being here. We appreciate your time.
Welcome for session number two. We titled this Generative Age. We also felt like everything's moving at the speed of light, and we're only meeting with you every 3 to 4-ish weeks. So as new things develop, we want to give you the information as fast as possible. So we started a Twitter, generative_age. It's on the bottom right. And we've been tweeting out information starting as of yesterday as it's coming. So that's a good way for us to keep you informed as things are developing. And the link to the session is timneedles.generativeage.com. And we're going to put a link to the recording as soon as it's done. And Amy did a really nice job of introducing us. So all of your comments and questions are going to help guide future sessions. So if you ask questions in the chat and we don't have a chance to answer them this session, we're going to be taking all the things that you're interested in to help guide all of our future sessions. And also, you guys have some pretty great ideas. So if you have an idea, please share it in the chat too. This is your chat just as much as it is ours.
Great. So what we're going to do is start with a quick landscape update, really give you a sense of a couple of major events that have happened over the past 3 weeks. Then Tim will be sharing tonight's session and his presentation on the impact of the arts, design, and music, generative AI. Alana and I have prepared some questions based on the feedback from the previous session, so thank you for that. We will then break out into small groups for some discussions. We'll do a share out, and then we have our invitation for the next session. And so as we're going along, feel free, jump into the chat and let us know what you have tried with generative AI since our last session. Feel free to just kind of throw some stuff up there. I know I can share personally that in Pleasantville today, where I'm an assistant superintendent, we just had a sharing session with all of our faculty. We did a PLC. We were really kind of talking about ChatGPT and generative AI for the first time, sort of in a large group. So that was a very exciting experience.
So we're just going to give you some updates. So ChatGPT used to be only for 18 and up. They just in their new release announced that it is now for 13 and up, but with guardian permission. So that's new. And I just want to remind everyone that is still limited to 2021 data. So the data that you're getting from the prompt responses is from 2021. It is not current and up to date. And that rolls right into the next one, the new Bing. I was very fortunate to be invited to join the private beta. So I've been playing around with it. They're a partner of OpenAI. So they're using the same technology as ChatGPT. And this is their words. I put in a quote, it's reliable, up-to-date results, and complete answers to your questions. Of course, it also cites the sources. So the big main differences here are that you find the source of where the information is coming from. And in ChatGPT, there's no sources, so you can't check if it's reliable. So in the new Bing, they provide sources, and it is timely and up to date and pulling information from the internet right now in 2023. And then I liked that they had different conversation styles of, so what are you trying to get out of it? Is it creative? Is it balanced? Is it more precise? So I thought that was a really interesting touch that ChatGPT didn't have. And then I'll let Cameron take it from here.
And some other developments. I'm sure many of you read in the news about Bard, which is Google's large language model, generative AI competitor to ChatGPT. They did sort of, I mean, 2 or 3 weeks ago, it was a big week in generative AI. Microsoft announced the new Bing with the partnership with OpenAI, and then Google announced Bard. And then certainly what's notable is in the rush to push it out to the market, largely, I mean, it went through, and but they had a couple of large, very public, very visible gaffes, and that had a major impact on their market position in terms of valuation. So just kind of watching things unfold in real time. Meta did make an announcement about a large language model that actually works on a single GPU. So as these models get more sophisticated, there is this tension between larger and more robust and more efficient. So I think as this expands, we'll see more movement in both directions, right? We might see models with more parameters, and then we might see models where we're seeing them placed on single chips. And then the last one here is and I'm not going to I won't claim it as something that we've come up with, but this idea of EdTech 3.0, which are really AI-driven educational technologies. So Quill, Presto are a couple of the notable ones. And then Quizlet announced that they're doing an AI-driven chat module within Quizlet. So just another update there.
I just tweeted out earlier today a list of all different Web 3.0 tools that integrate AI. So if you're interested, check our Twitter. There's a whole image that we tweeted out.
As we get started here with Tim, share your favorite tool in the chat and tell us how you use it. And then we want to welcome Tim Needles. So I'll go ahead and hand it over to Tim.
So thanks so much for having me. And I thought, you know, there's a wild world of what's happening now in AI, especially in visual. So this should be a really interesting conversation. And I thought a good place to start would actually be talking about ChatGPT, since that was the previous conversation. So when we're talking about music, just recently, Colin Molloy, who's the lead singer of the Decemberists, used ChatGPT to see if it could write a song. So he asked it to write a Decemberist song in their style, and it did, and he asked it the title, and it said it was a sailor song, and it asked for the chord changes, and it provided that. And really, the conclusion, he actually recorded the song. You could go to his Colin Molloy's machine shop to take a listen, and it did sound something like a Decemberist song, but one of the things that he pointed out is that it really was lacking creativity, that it was very straightforward. And part of the reason why is because AI is really in its infancy. If you think of how far it's progressed from, you know, when it really started a couple of years ago to now, it's pretty amazing. But he said, you know, it has data, it has information, it has no intuition. And that's sort of like the interesting part. So that's one of the ways that, like, you can take a look at where it infuses with music. So it's an interesting way. There's also a really good This American Life podcast episode about a writer who was using it to kind of jumpstart writing. So, you know, this is one sort of usage of this. And then if we take a look, this is where it gets really interesting. So you could use AI to actually create new music with musicians that are no longer here. So the lost tapes of the 27 Club is one of those places. And there's a whole host of, you know, Nirvana songs that really sound like pretty good Nirvana songs here. So it's focused on the idea that, you know, a lot of these artists that were famous, Jimi Hendrix, Kurt Cobain, who died at the age of 27. And it has a nice message behind it, which is also a mental health message about how, you know, actually, you know, get help for mental health. But they created a number of songs in the style of these artists that is pretty believable. So one of the things I teach in my classes, so I teach film and emerging media, and you could actually have AI design music for you. That's really pretty good if you're looking for a soundtrack for something that is potentially usable. It does a pretty good job at actually creating soundtracks, especially in certain styles where they have enough data. So, you know, one of the things I like to talk about with any of this is taking a look at, you know, some of how AI could be used for good with visual music. So one of the ways I like to start is usually when I teach AI to students, I like to use Hour of Code. They have an Hour of Code project that talks about machine learning and how it could actually make a really positive impact on environmental, elements and sorting through data. So this is a really kind of interesting way to introduce it, especially to younger students who, you know, that this is going to be a big part of their life. So it kind of shows you the basics of how it works and sorts through data. And then you could actually kind of use what you learn and actually try it yourself. So Zooniverse, if you haven't heard of it, is a tool where they take a lot of AI projects and actually crowdsource them. So this is one that we did with my class. This was Mountain Zebra National Park. And they set up a bunch of camera traps that were taking photographs in the park. And they didn't have money to go through and sort all of this data, so they crowdsourced it. So this is one of the pictures that I took and I was sorting. So, you know, it asks you if there's an animal, a human, a vehicle, a fire in the image. So they're trying to find the zebras and, like, you know, what their patterns are in the park, but they're also looking for poachers. So, you know, we did this with my class a couple times and they were able to find quite a few of these. So this is a kind of a good way to introduce some of these ideas to students. Zooniverse has a bunch of different projects. They introduce new ones pretty regularly. So it's pretty interesting. So it gives students a hands-on approach to actually using AI for good. And that's important because, you know, there's lots of pros and cons to AI, and I think sharing some of that is important. So this is my favorite way to introduce how AI works visually. So this is QuickDraw. I'm sure some of you have played this game before. So it uses the Google AI, and the idea is that it tells you, we will actually try it right here. So it uses the data set, and it's going to ask me to draw something in 20 seconds. And the AI has to guess what I'm drawing. So when I started doing this, it went, there we go. So it guessed it right. Swimming pool. So how does it know that it's not just a rectangle? So it figured that out very fast. Ceiling fan. So that could look like a flower. But it knew right away what it was, and vase. And it figured out what that was, and carrot. I'm sure it'll get fast. And snowman, which I'm sure it'll get pretty quickly too. So I wasn't able to even finish any of my drawings. But the key is when you look at how it works, you can go into any of these images and look at the data set. So for Apple, you know, there's 140,000 images of Apple, and you can see where they start and how people move. And like this really kind of gives a really good sense of how AI works, right? You need massive amount of data to really understand. So in Apple, most people draw basically the same. They look, you know, there's a couple with bites in them, but they're more or less the same. But then there's some things that people are going to draw really differently. So if we look at bird, for instance, you know, these birds are similar, but not exactly the same. So you have a couple of like the seagull birds. So it has 111,000, but you can see how maybe it would get bird wrong. It's not going to be as predictable. So it's really interesting to take a look and go inside the data. One of the things I like about this is they actually make all the data totally available. So this is a great way to just show students how AI actually works, because you can see the actual data set. And then if you want to, you can go to the next step and actually draw with it. So there's a tool, because it's open source, there's a tool called Magic Sketchpad, where I could pick any different thing from that list and start drawing. So it's going to be Angel, and it starts drawing along with me. So once it kind of figured out what I'm doing, it draws along with you. So it's a little bit like drawing with a five-year-old, if you've ever done that. But then also it decides to put some things together that I wouldn't have thought. So like ant and yoga, bee and flower kind of makes sense. But if you go down here, like crab, rabbit, face paint. So it gets a little wacky, but you know, that's part of AI. It's, you know, I'm sure you may have heard that, like, it actually created its own language when it was actually in Google Translate in order to translate faster. So you could actually see, like, using these data sets is a really good way to introduce to students how AI works and actually co-create with it, which is kind of an interesting idea. And the drawings can be fantastic or kind of just a big mess. But, you know, that's the world of AI right now. So, you know, these are the really popular tools that people have been using. So DALL-E, certainly for fine art and photography, being one of the most famous. DALL-E 2, the new version, Midjourney, Stable Diffusion, and Lensa, which uses Stable Diffusion's algorithm. So you might have seen many Lensa portraits when you could just put your image in and it'll spit out like five or six different portraits. Crayon, which is another free one that's very similar. And then a tool like Shutterstock, which actually was a previous tool that they introduced part of AI into. So, you know, these are all tools where, you know, you're actually, you know, generally entering either images or text, and it's able to kind of put together images for you. So this is where most of the talk of AI in the arts is happening right now. Things like DALL-E, you know, if you ask it to, you know, create an astronaut riding a horse in space, it's able to do that. And then tools for film and video, which is pretty powerful too. So I actually had it create a short piece for this workshop. So you're able to just enter the text, choose the speaking voice, and it will actually edit together a video for you using AI generated voices and images. So, you know, it's able to do quite a bit. So these are the three most popular film and audio tools for that kind of thing that's happening now. So, you know, I just throw some of these out there. I know I'm looking in the chat and some people have used some of these and it's pretty interesting. And at this point, like, you know, I think we're all sort of in a big play box, kind of, you know, seeing what some of these tools could do. You know, I've seen a lot of friends who are artists, along with myself, playing with tools like DALL-E 2 and Midjourney creating. And I'm really glad I'm not a portrait artist because, you know, it does such a good job. You know, there are things that can be done, of course, by people, but it does such a good job so quickly that, you know, you could see that it would definitely replace some people who do this job. So certainly, you know, I've seen a couple of books that were done entirely through AI. So there's a couple of children's books that were put out that were written in ChatGPT, and then all the images were created in DALL-E or Midjourney. So kind of really interesting. So these are interesting tools to play with for sure. And I think that it could be really fun, but you also want to take a look at some of the things that are happening. So these are all really recent articles. So just recently, the U.S. Copyright Office says AI art can't be copyrighted. So that's kind of really important. So it, you know, it classifies it as a totally separate element. And we'll see kind of like what happens. This ruling just happened. And then, you know, you may have heard that the AI generated art won a few different art contests, and, you know, a lot of artists were upset about that. You know, from my perspective, it's a new tool. You know, when Photoshop came out, some people who were designers were really upset about the fact that, you know, you don't need to have all of those tools and it sped up the work. But it's a really similar sort of situation. So, you know, whenever a new tool comes out, there's pros and cons. And I think there's things to be aware of. It does also facilitate our lives sometimes as creative people. So here's the one thing that does concern me a little bit, which is deepfakes. So this is when you're able to create AI-generated video, and you're actually able to really make it believable, and you really can't tell any longer what's real and fake. So I'm going to just reshare for a second because I want to make sure you can hear the audio here. We will take a quick look at these two deepfakes. And this is an interesting place to talk about with students' media literacy, which is really important. So here's a fun one.
Here's the very funny Bill Hader, ladies and gentlemen. You know, it seemed like every movie I saw in the last several months, you were in it. And good for you. That's just great.
Oh, thanks, buddy. Thanks.
And I was wondering about the one, the Tropic Thunder.
Yeah, Thunder.
Tom Cruise. You're working with Tom Cruise. What was that experience like?
It was amazing. Like, we got to dance together. That was amazing. We had, like, you know, when you do a movie, you do table reads, you know, where, like, all the actors get together.
Or at the
and
beginning of the
At the
production.
Beginning, before anything, you get together and you read through the script. And so it's like, you know, all these heavyweights, like, you know, Ben Stiller, Jack Black, Robert Downey Jr., everybody. And then at the end is, like, me. Like, you know, like, hey, happy to be here, guys. You know, like, and some other supporting guys. And then Tom Cruise walks in.
Oh, my God.
And even those guys are like, whoa, and he's super stoked to be there. You know, just like, yeah, oh, boom. You know, like, he's like,
wow.
He's just immediately excited when he walks into a room. So he comes over and he sits next to me. And I think he had been briefed on some of the mm-hmm. supporting guys, but he was like trying to place me, you know? So he sat down next to me and he's like, I love your work. And I went, oh, thanks. I love your work too, Tom Cruise. You know, like, thanks. I go, yeah, you know, I'm friends with Judd Apatow and Seth Rogen, and they went to your house. And went, yes, yes, yes. They did come to my house. And I said, Seth Rogen was like, you know, it was amazing. He has like a, you know, a bike track in his backyard. It's phenomenal. And I did a Seth Rogen impression, and it was like I did a magic trick. Tom Cruise was like, yeah.
Wow.
And he points to me. And he pointed to me, and he goes, you do impressions, and you're on Saturday Night Live.
So you can get an idea of how that works. I could see some people in the chat notice how the face was shifting. Here's another example from Jordan Peele.
Now with former President Obama taking on fake news, except turns out it is not really President Obama in this PSA. This is a clear example of technology that could become more widely used. And ABC's David Wright is here with more. David, this video is proof that we can't believe everything that we see online.
That is right, Paula. Good morning. They say that the camera never lies, but technology is advancing so fast that it can lie with greater and greater effectiveness. And that's the point of this new video from Jordan Peele.
Our enemies can make it look like anyone is saying anything at any point in time.
Former President Barack Obama, right?
So, for instance, they could have me say things like, I don't know, Killmonger was right.
Wrong.
You see, I would never say these things, but someone else would. Someone like Jordan Peele.
Comedian Jordan Peele actually produced this video to warn about the future of fake news. The technology uses sophisticated artificial intelligence tools able to turn familiar faces, even presidents, into puppets.
Now there is software that can be purchased and done at home, and within a few days, you can manufacture what someone says in a video.
Most people use it for harmless fun, like inserting Nicolas Cage into movies where he doesn't belong. But it can be scary stuff. Recently, hackers took this image of Parkland High School senior Emma Gonzalez tearing up a gun range target for Teen Vogue. They manipulated it to come up with a clip that appeared to show her tearing up the Constitution instead. Just the sort of nefarious use Jordan Peele and BuzzFeed, which co-produced the video, is warning.
So that gives you an idea of some of kind of what's going on. And there's tools like FaceSwap that you could do that now. And we're kind of at the edge of where we could actually tell what's real and fake through data. So, you know, it's gotten good enough at this point where we're about to enter the territory where you won't be able to actually tell what's real and fake. So it's really important, especially in our sort of heightened political climate, to kind of be aware of that, you know, deep fakes and what AI is capable of for negative and positive, you know, uses.
Here's the very funny Bill Hader, ladies and gentlemen.
So, all right, I'll hand it off back to Elena for questions. And
thank you, Tim. That was really such an awesome presentation. Thank you for joining us. The one question that was in the chat, you answered. It was about the copyright. So that one was answered. So we do have a couple questions that we pulled for you, and Cameron and I will just go back and forth. So I guess I'll start. How do you think generative AI can help students develop their creativity and critical thinking skills?
You know, I think that every time you introduce any kind of limitation, you could actually find a creative way out of it. So, you know, I think AI is a really good way to sort of start the ball rolling for students who are maybe afraid to be creative. So it really does help you get started. I mean, that's kind of the key aspect that I find it really valuable in. So, you know, a lot of students don't know where to start. They have an idea. They might not have the skills to really do it yet. And you could use some of these AI tools to really get the ball rolling. And, you know, once you kind of see someone come up with an idea, we've all been in a room before, you know, where someone asks a question and, like, you know, there's that quiet that happens when, you know, everyone's thinking. And once you have an answer or two, it's a lot easier to kind of come up, you know, the pressure is off. So that's one of the valuable uses of AI at this point, in that, you know, if you're trying to do something that's a little bit difficult, it really does help you get started.
Awesome. So I'm going to jump in here with the second question. And can you give us an example of how you've transformed your teaching based on generative AI? If you can kind of walk us through, like, a specific example of where you taught one lesson in this way, and then this came along and you shifted.
Yeah, I think it was a big shift, actually, because I used to teach skills. And then, you know, some of these skills are just not that important to have anymore. So, like, you know, you actually reshift and pivot to teaching about ideas instead. So, you know, it's a more philosophical approach. Because just like with Google, when Google came out, you know, all of a sudden we didn't need to remember so many facts because you could just search them. You know, it's good to know certain facts, but, you know, you don't need to remember everything. It just doesn't have the same importance that it used to. So, you know, the same thing is true with art and music. You know, certain skills are not as valuable. So, you know, we do use it as a tool, just like any other tool. So, you know, students will use it to kind of get started on ideas. And, you know, in some areas, like, you know, in the APR test, you know, they're going to have a big issue this year, and sort of, you know, where do you draw the line with what's created by a person and what's created by AI? And I'm glad I'm not part of that, you know, that has to make that decision, because it's going to be very difficult. It's sort of a big shift. But certainly, you know, I've made a shift in my teaching to incorporate it as just another tool at this point, and expose students to it for the positive, and then also mention some of the potential negatives and how it could have an impact in the future.
That kind of leads into the next question. So how do you evaluate for quality and originality?
Yeah, you know, that's the funny thing. You know, the more you talk about originality, the more you realize that it doesn't really exist exactly. You know, everyone is based on someone else. We're all exposed to, you know, the Beatles wouldn't have happened without, you know, a lot of musicians that came before them. And then after the Beatles, everyone sounded like the Beatles. So, you know, there's no way to really, you know, identify. I think original ideas are valuable. And there's, you know, Austin Kleon is a favorite author of mine, who wrote Steal Like an Artist. You know, and in that he kind of shares that, like, you know, every artist sort of, like, steals ideas, but, you know, you don't just steal one idea. You're not just stealing Picasso. You're blending it and you're merging it. with other things. And, you know, it becomes just one color in the palette. So I think the idea is that how do you, and I spend time actually talking about this with students. I think that's helpful too. You know, how do you tell your story? So like I try to have my students never produce like cookie cutter artwork in any kind of way. You want to really tell your story. And if it's true to you, nothing could really be stolen in terms of being original. Like if you're telling your truth, that's something that is totally individual, and each of us have a different experience in life. I think that's where I kind of start that conversation with students. And then it also brings up interesting ideas, you know, in terms of, grades and things like that and assessments. You know, it becomes much more difficult. I shifted my assessment point of view as well. So I like to judge on growth rather than the final product, because I think, you know, the process teaches you more than the product does. So I want students to really have a wide berth of knowledge. But I think that's sort of like the conversation that's really helpful to have with students. And they have some interesting points on it too, especially digital natives, you know, who have been using, you know, TikTok since, you know, and a lot of these AI filters are put into things like TikTok. And that's where they're first exposed to them. So like, even before they realize they're using AI, they realize that some of the filters that they like happen to have AI in them. So that's kind of helpful to have that conversation.
Awesome. So I'm actually going to jump in here and ask the next question. And I'm going to ask Becca's question, because I feel like that actually is a nice segue from what we were just talking about. So to what extent should students know and or understand skills underlying AI in order to best use it?
I think that's actually probably huge. I think it's really important to understand how AI works, how you need a huge data set, and the more data you have, the better the results are. I also like handicapping that data, just like glitch art or something like that. Like, what if you put a very small amount of data in and you get intentionally bad results that are interesting? You know, like, so you don't need to use any tool, including AI, for the intended purpose. Sometimes it's good to actually use it the wrong way and see what kind of interesting results you get. And I think that's a creative, you know, original kind of use of AI. So I think, you know, it's really important to understand the concept of how it works. Also, this is a technology unlike any that we've really dealt with, because, you know, the speed of technology growth has changed, and just, you know, it gets so quick that I think AI will be with us for a long time, and it'll make a big impact on our daily lives. So, you know, there's only so much we know at this point. And one of the problems with AI, if anyone saw, this weekend, there was a really good, last weekend, actually, John Oliver did a really good special on AI and art. And he was talking about how it's a black box problem. We don't know what's happening behind the scenes with AI. And that's one of the issues. There are things like OpenAI, and like the reason I like that Google Quick Draw is that you could open it up and see all of the input. And that's really powerful. So, you know, even if it's a simple thing, you get to see all of the input and you have a better understanding of how it works. And I think that's really the thing that we need to teach students now, about how it uses data, how data is valuable, you know. So like ChatGPT is just using the internet. So it has a huge data source, where like the Google Quick Draw is only using the inputted data. So you're choosing to actually input the data. So like, you know, those kind of things are important. You know, privacy is probably one of the biggest issues, because lots of artists' work end up, you know, being remixed, you know, unknowingly by AI. There's a couple really big lawsuits now. Getty is the big one, because, you know, Getty images were being remixed and put into AI. So, you know, we'll see how that progresses. But I think it's important to kind of share with students how it works. That's the key.
Thank you so much, Tim, for answering our questions. We're going to jump into breakout rooms next. Really great chat. I don't know if you guys, I felt like it's so great to hear you talk and hear your thoughts and share your opinions, because everyone really has so much to contribute to the conversation. Mark your calendars. We're featuring Chappaqua Central School District. Josh Caldwell Block will be presenting. They've already rolled out a full professional development plan. By the time they meet with us, they will have gone through three sessions out of Thor. So we'll hear about their professional development plan and see their lessons learned, things they change. So as you're rolling this out in your districts, you can get some ideas. And we always want to hear your ideas too. So it's a time to collaborate and hear how other people are rolling out professional development as well. So that's March 27th at 7 p.m. And then our future sessions may include generative AI and maybe writing, ethics, academic integrity, curiosity detection, redesigning your assignments for this new technology, bias and misinformation, and much, much, much more. So each session will cover a specific subtopic and feature a guest that's an expert, or as Cameron coined, a fellow in that category. So we need you. We're looking for facilitators and collaborators, or fellows, we should call them, to help shape our future sessions on generative AI and education. So if you have an idea of someone who you might think would be really great to help guide the conversation, Tim really blew it out of the park with this one. So whoever follows Tim, tough act to follow, but I think we can get a really awesome lineup. So we need you. And then I just want to thank you for joining us. I really love hearing what you have to say and joining the breakouts and listening to you and seeing what you write in the chat gives me inspiration and helps guide future sessions. So thank you so much for coming. So we're trying our best to make this as much of a community as possible. So by joining these sessions, it allows you to talk to each other and get ideas. By you giving us ideas, it will help guide the session. So we're trying to build a community. So if you have any ideas for future sessions, please let us know. Any resources, we're happy to take them into consideration. So thank you so much for your time. We're right on the 8 o'clock mark. I can't believe we did it. I can't believe we finished in an hour. And I'm really looking forward to continuing the conversation.
Anna, thank you. Cameron, thank you. And Tim, thank you for the tremendous presentation. And thank you all for joining and for staying with us. And we look forward to seeing you at the next installment. Thank you and have a great night.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Generative Age, powered by Nicescape.
We want to remind you that you can join us during the live recordings of these conversations and engage with like-minded colleagues. This is a great opportunity to ask questions, participate in back-channel discussions, and engage in breakout room activities to further your understanding of the topics we discussed.
Stay informed about the latest developments in AI and education by following us on social media at @generative_age. Join us next time for another exciting conversation. Until then, keep learning and keep growing in the generative age.